Okay, the sugya about the brachos, I want to spend most of the time talking about the bracha itself, the brachos themselves, so I can't devote too much time to the concept of the Heichon Sivanu, but it's an incredibly important Shas topic, so I'll just spend a few minutes just making you aware. I did put a little bit about it in our Makomos, about the major machlokas that surrounds this idea, that when the Gemara introduces the concept of making brachos on Neres Chanukah, so the Gemara talks about the proper bracha for the first bracha, what's clearly a Berachas HaMitzvah, Baruch HaShir Kedushat HaMitzvah, so if it's Yivano Lahadlik Ner Shel Chanukah. We discussed a little bit last week, whether it's Ner Chanukah, Ner Shel Chanukah, Ner Shel Chanukah, whatever exactly the phrase is, but what's not in dispute is that it contains the words Asher Kedushat HaMitzvah Vitzivanu. So the Gemara asks the question, what are you talking about? Heichon Sivanu, I read the whole Chumash from beginning to end. I didn't see anything about Neres Chanukah there. So the truth is, we've been discussing how maybe there's a little bit room to say a little differently, but strictly speaking, it's true. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that there is a mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. So Heichon Sivanu, and obviously it would be quite problematic to say that there is such a mitzvah if the incident happens long after the Torah. So where exactly do you find the Torah mitzvah to light Neres Chanukah? So here the Gemara says, okay, Reviv Yamar Miloy Saser. Because the Pasuk says, in Parsha Shoftim Loy Saser, and Rechem Yamar Shalavicha V'yageicha, Zekenecha V'yomrlach. So this is a difficult machlokas, because the Gemara on the surface seems to be taking a stand against, or in one view, of a major machlokas Rishonim. That there is a question in general, where does rabbinic authority come from? Where do we know that there is a mitzvah to listen to the dictates of Chazal? And the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim connects it to the Pasuk in Parsha Shoftim, that the Torah says that if one finds himself in a position, ki polim chadaver, one finds himself in a situation he doesn't know what the Torah asks of him. So then, v'kamta v'alisa v'halach l'makom, you should get up and you should go to the place where the authority is, whoever the authority is, whether it's the shofet or whoever. You should go to the halachic authority, and whatever they tell you, v'asisa kashir yorucha, you should follow the instruction, lo sasim radavar shiagid l'chayom in a small. You shouldn't deviate from that which is commanded you, not to the right or to the left. So Rambam says, okay, there you have it, that when the halachic authority tells you something, you're not allowed to deviate, well, saucer, you have to do what they said. So he says, that's the source for mitzvos d'rabbanan, for the ability of Chazal to make new legislation. And of course, the question is a complicated one on a couple of levels. I'll talk a little bit more about it in a second, but on the surface, the question simply is, why do we have to listen if the rabbis tell us to do something, so mehechitesi, that there is a obligation to follow what they say. So says the Rambam, it's because of this pasuk of lo sasa. And the Ramban takes issue with this. I don't know if any of you had a chance to read the Ramban. I put it on one of the versions of the Maamar Kamos. It's a little bit extensive. But essentially, what are the Ramban's issues with the Rambam? It's got a couple of issues, right? Some are specific and some are general. Now, first of all, in terms of the context, so the context doesn't really seem to be talking about new legislation. So if we look to the model of the American government, so we know that in the American government we have three branches of government. We have the executive branch of the president, but besides that we have the legislative branch of Congress, and we have the judiciary branch of the Supreme Court. And the legislative branch and the judiciary branch are very intentionally and distinctly kept separate from each other. So we do certainly recognize that it's two separate functions, that the legislature creates new laws, and the judiciary interprets the existing laws. And if a judge were to say, well, the law says X, but I think it should say Y, and therefore I rule Y, so that's considered to be a violation of his role. That's what's called legislating from the bench. The judge is supposed to tell you what he thinks the law is, not what he thinks the law should be. And the legislative branch is empowered with creating new laws, but they don't get to tell you what the existing laws mean. If you have a debate as to what the law means, that's for the court to decide. So the context in the Chumash, it sounds like we're talking about judiciary authority, that if you don't know what the Torah means, what the existing Chumash is telling us, so then the halachic authority of that time has binding authority to tell you what it should mean. But it's not clear from that context, and it's a big jump to say that there's legislative authority, to say that this body is empowered to create new laws that are not in the Torah. That's a big chiddush. So that's one level on which the Ramban argues with the Rambam. He also has a problem that if you're going to say that it's a pasuk in Chumash, and it's not just a pasuk, it's a losa say, if you're going to say that essentially all of Dinim Derabanan are contained within this losa say, so then what right do we have to distinguish between Dinim Derabanan and Dinim Daraisa in halachic context? Most prominently, I mean, there are many examples of this, but the most famous one is the rule of Safek Daraisa L'Chumra, Safek Derabanan L'Kula. What right do we have to be lenient by rabbinic law if it all essentially is Torah law according to the Rambam? Not only is it Torah law, but it's an Isser Daraisa. If we assume that Isurim are more Chumra than positive mitzvos, so all the mitzvos traced to Lo Saser, isn't that a very serious matter? What right do we have to then distinguish and to say when it comes to rabbinic law, we will be more lenient? So those are among the issues the Ramban has with the Rambam, and leaves open a bigger question, though, for the Ramban, because the Ramban, as far as we know, Ramban was an Orthodox Jew too, right? The Ramban also believed in following rabbinic rules. So the problem is, if you're going to reject this pasuk, then what is the basis for rabbinic authority? And this seems to be perhaps machlokas in this Gemara, that the first opinion says, Lo Saser Taka seems to be the source of saying there's a tzivoy of Ner Chanukah. And then the other opinion of Nachman says no. But to say no and say Shalavicha V'yageicha, it's not clear how that helps. It's a more vague kind of pasuk, it's less direct, but it still, on the one hand, would seem to raise a lot of the same issues as far as essentially plugging Dinim Derabanan into the Torah itself, while on the other hand, not giving us as clear a direction. So it's not so obvious how exactly this machlokis ties in, but it seems like this is taking a side in this discussion. I also put on the list for you the Gemara on Brachas and Daf Yates, where the Gemara also seems to be taking a side in the discussion, because the Gemara talks about the sugya of Kavod Avrios, which is a major Shabbos sugya, and maybe we'll find time to talk about it. I think we did talk about it 2 years ago in Shabbos. But the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Yates talks about it as well. And the Gemara initially says that Kavod Avrios is such a big deal that it's Dorcha Lo Sase Shabbatar, that it could push off a Torah prohibition. And the Gemara says, what are you talking about? We know that's not the rule, that it does not push off Torah prohibitions. So then the Gemara says, well, actually what we're talking about is the prohibition of Lo Saser, because it overcomes Dinim Derabanan. And then there's a whole back and forth in the Gemara about that, but the Gemara there used that expression, Kol Milei Derabanan Asmachuhu Akra D'Lo Saser, that all of the Dinim Derabanan were attached to the Pasuk of Lo Saser. So that source can and is used as a proof, really, in both directions. And on one hand, the Gemara does clearly seem to link the notion of Dinim Derabanan with this pasuk. So it's not so far off to say there's some hint of legislative authority in this pasuk. At the same time, the Gemara there uses the language of asmachu, which sounds like it's an asmachta, which normally indicates to us that's probably not the actual intent of the pasuk. So the Gemara is a little bit vague as whether it's a proof or anything or not, as is this Gemara. So, for example, if you do maintain Revivia's opinion that Lo Saser is the source, so is that a proof for the Rambam? Sounds like it, but you could also say, I think Rav Soloveitchik had a suggestion along these lines, that the Ramban would read this Gemara saying that the language of Asher Kedusharim Mitzvosa Vitzivanu is not so inappropriate, is understandable because of the larger concept of listening to Chazal, but not necessarily that Lo Saser means that you have to actually obey Dinim Derabanan. So you have to figure out if that's not the source, so then what is the source? It's possible to understand it. B'chanu Wasserman has long essays about this in a kuntris called Divrei Sofrim, which he wrote, which is printed together with his Sefer Kovetz Shirim. Find in there the Kuntres Divrei Sofrim. So there he discusses also the possibility that essentially it's all a function of Avas Hashem. That if you love a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so you don't want to follow only the direct mitzvot, but you want to follow also that which is indirect, that which we understand that he would like, so to speak, even if it's not explicit. And that the whole role of Dinim D'Rabbanan is Chazal are able to tell us what is between the lines, what exactly is the Ratzon Hashem. And therefore, if we know that something is the Ratzon Hashem, even if it's not a direct commandment, we would want to fulfill it anyway. There's some who discuss whether perhaps there's a role of a neder here, maybe there's a communal neder, that we bind ourselves to Chazal, that explains some things, doesn't explain other things. We're not giving a full discussion, I just wanted to explain a little bit of the background in terms of what this sugya is kind of touching upon. It's a question whether the Ramban and the Rambam are really that different from each other, because the Rambam presumably also doesn't really think that Dinim D'Rabbanan are actually plugged into the Torah itself. And for example, in Hilchos Brachos, the Rambam explains that the language of Asher Kedushar Mitzvosa V'Tzivan, essentially the question our Gemara is asking, is how can we use that language when saying a bracha on a mitzvah d'Rabbanan? So the Rambam explains that what it really means is Asher Kedushar Mitzvosa V'Tzivan, L'shmoa L'elu She'etzivu Hadlik Ner Shulchanikim. But essentially, it's a long form of saying that we're obligated to listen to Chazal, who commanded us to light Neros Chanukah. So it's probably the case that the Rambam's position is that not that a mitzvah d'Rabbanan really becomes a mitzvah d'Oraisa. And then you'll ask, oh, but what about Safek d'Oraisa l'chumra? But that it's more of an umbrella notion. Meshech Chachma has a famous mashal along these lines. Then he says, let's say you have a mashal with a king and a prince, but we, in our world, we could probably say it a little bit more relevant. Let's say you have a teacher and a principal. Right? So the principal is the boss of the school. Or I guess you have a president and the rebbe. Right? So the rebbe works for the president, and the president backs up the authority of the rebbe. So if somebody's going to punch out one of the rebbe, so then he's going to have to answer to the president. The president provides the authority. But it doesn't mean that every word the rebbe says is as if the president says it. And so too, if the way Meshech Chachma puts it, if a king says, okay, I'm putting my son, the prince, in charge of this region. So his authority comes from the king. But it doesn't mean that whatever he says, it's the king talking. It means that if you rebel against the prince, you're going to have to answer to the king.
Right. You still go as far as to say that it's still the ratzon of the king for you to follow?
Yeah, in general, it's the ratzon that he be respected, which translates into following what he says. But, you know, if the prince then says, okay, I want everyone to wear a green shirt, it doesn't mean that the king wanted everyone to wear a green shirt, and that should be viewed as an instruction of the king. It means that the king said, you have to follow what the prince said. Okay, he wants a green shirt, so do that, whatever it is. But he doesn't particularly take interest in that detail. And there are some who understand that in terms of the Isser of Lo Sasser, that one would violate an Isser D'Oraisa if one would rebel against Chazal conceptually. If one would say, you know, one of the examples we always give, because the Rambam likes this example, is chicken and milk. It seems to be the standard Issa D'Rabbanan to give as an example. So if you're going to have a chicken cheeseburger, so is that an Issa D'Oraisa of Lo Sasser if you eat a chicken cheeseburger? So some will understand that it's an Issa D'Oraisa if you say, I can eat a chicken cheeseburger because Chazal have no authority to tell me what to do. If you say that I recognize that they have the authority, but I'm just very hungry and it's very tempting, so then, okay, so if it's simply that you have a type of a chicken cheeseburger, then that would not be an Isser of Lo Sasser. That it only becomes an Isser D'Oraisa when it emerges from a rebellion against the authority of Chazal. And that has all kinds of implications. Again, I'm happy to talk about this in more length at a different time. I just want to get back to Hanukkah. But the idea that we've alluded to in the past, that some understand that an Isser D'Rabbanan in general is really an Isser Merit. It's necessary to rebel against Chazal. That connects to the notion that we've talked about a lot in the context of Hanukkah, that Yisurim D'Rabbanan are not viewed, according to many, as Yisurei Chefza. That the item doesn't have any significance. There's no status. It's just that the individual is forbidden to eat the chicken cheeseburger. But the chicken cheeseburger is not a Chefza Shal Yisur. The rabbis don't have the ability to define the item. They have the ability to tell people what to do, and therefore we're not allowed to eat it. This also opens up the question in general. Let's say, for example, we know that children are obligated in mitzvos midrabanan, what we call chinuch. But that sentence may have been imprecise. Some of the Rishonim understand that you can't say children are obligated in mitzvos to rabbanon, because children are pater from mitzvos to begin with. So if they're pater from mitzvos, then they can't be obligated in mitzvos to rabbanon, because there's nothing to be mechayiv them. So the whole notion of children being obligated in mitzvos, maybe that's an imprecise statement. Maybe it really means that the father is obligated to teach the children to do mitzvos, but there really is no chiyuv on children. Which again ties into other aspects of Chanukah. Again, the question of how can a older child, the katan shegiyah lechinuch, how can he light Chanukah candles on behalf of the household? What kind of mechanism does that draw upon? These are things we've spoken about. All touches upon this question. So in general, in terms of the Ramban's issues, so one approach you find is this kind of umbrella approach, that the Rambam just means that there's an authority that's backed up by the Torah, but he wouldn't mean that the mitzvos themselves become mitzvos daraisa. So, for example, the Rambam, when he lays out his rules for how he counts mitzvos, he writes that mitzvos drabanan do not count as part of the 613. We don't say that when the Gemara says in Makos that 613 mitzvos were given at Sinai, so we don't count drabanan as individual mitzvos. There are other Rishonim who disagree. But the Rambam, who the Ramban is accusing of being too much of the opinion that the Rabbanans come from the Torah, even the Rambam would tell you that we don't count them as separate mitzvos, and that the Nusach of Asher Kedushan Mitzvos of Vitzivanu means to listen to those who said this. So it's a question just how far apart the Rambam and the Ramban really are. Practically, it's very possible they're not really in any different place practically. The Rambam just sees it as an umbrella kind of idea, and would still recognize that the Rabbanans are just still fully the Rabbanans, and that's why Safek, the Rabbanan, Lahakel, etc., etc. Others take a little bit of a different approach, and they say that if you would leave the mitzvahs on their own, that the rule would have been that Safek, the Rabbanan, Lahachmir, because since it all comes from the Torah's authority, so therefore, by default, it would have been Lahachmir. But Chazal intentionally weakened their own rules. They intentionally impose a policy on their own legislation that it should be lahakel. So why did they do that? So there's two basic theories as to why that is. One is that it's because we're also concerned about the issur of Baal Tosef. That's a major issue here. When we talk about rabbinic authority, we want to figure out why we have to listen. But we also want to figure out why it's not a violation of the issur d'oraisa of Baal Tosef. So the Rambam in Hilchos Ma'amar maintains that it's not Baal Tosef as long as it's clear that you're not pretending it's in the Torah itself. If you want to make new legislation, but you don't try to pass it off as if it's from the Chumash, so then that's already not a violation of Baal Tosef. So some understand that that's why you have the whole concept of Safek Derabanan Lekula, so that we can make it clear that they're not considered to be mitzvos from the Torah itself. And then it's an interesting question. So how effective is this system? But on the one hand, if it's so crucial that the mitzvot be identifiable as drabanan, so that it's not going to do Baal Tosef, so it seems to be a little bit problematic that nowadays we often have a shaila whether something is deraisa drabanan. It's often the subject of machlokas. And there are some entire svarim that are dedicated to that issue in terms of clarifying what's deraisa and what's drabanan. So it seems to be a little problematic if this is so important that we know the difference, the fact that we don't always seem to know the difference. On the other hand, we also do see that it is effective, at least in the Beis Medrash, because, and we'll see this as we get more into Malachas issues next semester, but it's true in any area of Halacha, but very much so in Hilchos Shabbos, that if you want to figure out Halacha Maisa of anything, you really can't get anywhere unless you can clarify whether something is Daraisa Drabban. It almost always makes a difference. So these differences, la halacha, force us to constantly be aware of what's min haTorah and what's min drabanan, and if that's necessary to avoid an issur of Baal Tosef, so then we can see how it does seem to have an impact on that level. Another type of explanation that's used is that maybe Chazal made their issurim intentionally lahakel, because that was all that's necessary, that if their issurim are for the most part harchakos, their safeguards, it's not that there's, it flows from what we said before, it's not that they're inherently bad. A chicken cheeseburger is not inherently bad. It's bad because it's very similar to a beef cheeseburger, and we may come to eat beef cheeseburgers if we allow chicken cheeseburgers. So if that's the whole purpose, so then it's enough that we prohibit the vadai situations. It's enough to say, don't knowingly eat the chicken cheeseburger because that may come to have you eating beef cheeseburgers. But if you don't even know that for sure that it's a chicken cheeseburger, it might be, but you don't know that it is, so then maybe there's no reason to prohibit that because it's not going to lead to the Isser Daraisa. So maybe Chazal's purposes were served by only prohibiting definite circumstances, and the whole nature of a safeguard is that we don't have to actually go so far as to prohibit suffix situations, and therefore that was all they needed to do. So different explanations why it would be that suffix Rabban Lakula and other such kulas would be there, if one assumes that this pasuk or another pasuk, one of the pasukim that the Gemara talks about, is indeed the source for Dinan Rabban. Hi.
Could a proof for that be the situation where you have like three pieces of meat, but you're not sure which one mm-hmm. is, and so because of that
rove
suffix, you would be able to eat any one of them? Is that
well, you would be. In general, if you have a rove, depends on the exact facts. But without getting into all the intricacies of safek, but the whole notion of whether you're a machmir or a mekel on a safek, perhaps the point is here that when it comes to Rabbanan, there are many explanations for safek Rabbanan Lakula, but one of them might be that it's an intentional policy, meaning that, obviously intentional, meaning that it's an affirmative policy, that the default would have been the other way. It would have been safek lahachmir, but Chazal affirmatively made it lahakel because that was all that was necessary, so why go further? Hi.
The last point that I mentioned about the Rabbanan's not really, they're only safeguards for the rest, and therefore it's a subbing the Rabbanan, so then there's really no point in more. Would that give any validity to, let's say, you have a Darabanan that's really only to safeguard the rest, but you, let's say you know, like, it's not going to come close to, like, if you do the Darabanan, you're still, there's no way you would do the Darabanan.
Yeah, for the most part, we don't say that, although it's not
100%.
Right, so it's a little bit of a complex discussion, which does also get into Hilchos Shabbos in a pretty major way. So the truth is, maybe we'll find more of an opportunity next semester to revisit this topic at greater length. But on the surface, it seems that, simply put, without getting into some of the complexities, that the Darabanans are true regardless of their actual likelihood of causing a violation. There is some possibility of a notion, like you alluded to, of Batla HaTam, Batla HaGzeira, But we have to figure out when that may conceivably apply and when it wouldn't apply. Here, the difference from what we're describing now is we're saying that Chazal, at the moment that they set it up, they said this is enough. They imposed their initial gezeirah in such a way that it would only cover definite circumstances because that was all they needed to. So it's a bigger jump to say from there that we can read into a certain situation and say, well, we don't have to actually observe it. Hi.
I hope we're not going too much into this, but sort of just the opposite question. When do we apply the idea of lo plug?
Yeah, that is a big question. So that's, again, maybe we'll find time to get into this a little bit more. It's the other half of Shmuley's question, that sometimes we see that they made a lo plug gezeira. And for the most part, we do assume that they made a lo plug gezeira. Because even Batla Tam, Batla Gezeira would not necessarily be against the Loplug. It would say that maybe the Gzeir itself was limited to a certain Tkufa, that maybe that Tkufa no longer exists. So we don't have an obvious answer to this question. It's a very complex sugya. Maybe we'll find opportunities within Hilchos Shabbos to revisit it a little bit more, because it really deserves a lot more attention. And I just couldn't let this Gemara pass without taking note of the fact that there is a major machlokas that's tied into it. Okay, so let's try at least to talk a little bit about the concept of the bracha of Ner Chanukah. So once we can establish that we can make a bracha and we can say Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosa Vitzivanu, so then there is a possibility, which we've seen alluded to already in the past, that maybe this is more than a normal Berachas HaMitzvah. So we understand that in general there is a notion that Chazal instituted brachos on mitzvos min HaTorah for sure. And here we're saying on mitzvos Derabanan as well. But there is also a possibility, this whole sugya, and that's also what I would just kind of want you to be aware of, that our sugya contains a lot of different things in one breath, and maybe they're all tied into each other. And that maybe we basically have at least, let's say, four concepts here. We have a bracha of Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosu V'Tzivanu, we have a bracha of Sha'asa Nisim, we have a bracha of Shehechianu, and we have a concept of haroah, that you make some of these brachos even as a passive observer. So it's possible that all of these sugyas define each other, that they're all intertwined, and we'll have to continue a little bit tomorrow, but just to say a few words about it now. So when it comes, for example, to the bracha of Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosa V'Tzivanu, so we saw that we've seen already some allusions to the idea that maybe it's more than a berachas ha-mitzvah, but that maybe it becomes a part of the mitzvah itself. That since the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Pirsumei Nisa, and since Pirsumei Nisa requires that this act be identified as something which is not for your own purposes, something which is not mundane, so therefore maybe the bracha plays a more crucial role. It's interesting to draw a comparison in general. So we have a concept of kavana by mitzvos. So it's a machlokis in the Gemara whether we say mitzvos trichas kavana or not. And the interesting thing is actually an unresolved machlokis. Adayom hazeh, machlokis is not really resolved as to whether we say mitzvos have to be with intent or mitzvos can be fulfilled even without intent. The Shulchan Aruch does paskin that Kriya Shema needs kavana, which could be interpreted as taking a stand and saying, okay, the Shulchan Aruch paskin is you need kavana. But the Nosei Kelim discussed that there's all kinds of distinctions that can be made. Maybe Kriya Shema is a deraisa, but the Rabbanos don't need kavana. Maybe Kriya Shema is just a statement, so that needs kavana, but an action would not need kavana. There's a lot of room to wonder whether or not that is really definitive. And then there are some who maintain that even the Shulchan Aruch said that Kriya Shema needs kavana. It's itself a suffik, because it's Kriya Shema is deraisa, so it's saying suffik, deraisa, lachmir. So the Shulchan Aruch says, have kavana for Kriya Shema because the issue is a suffik, whatever it is that he's saying there. So it's not clear what the conclusion is. But there are many who assume that one of the functions of a bracha by a mitzvah, among other things, is in order to provide kavana, to make it clear that the mitzvah is intentional. Whether or not you say that kavana is absolutely crucial, but maybe the bracha is there to facilitate that. Now, you clearly can't say that it's the only way to have kavana and that kavana is crucial, because we certainly assume that berachas mitzvah sid rabban. So you can't tell me the bracha is absolutely crucial for the kavana and that kavana is ma'akev, because those two wouldn't work together. But it's still possible to understand that a bracha is an institution midrabanan, but with the intent, in addition to being shavach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they should declare that there's kavanah for the mitzvahs. You might be aware also, part of a whole Hasidic misnagdic controversy, that the Noda Bihuda has a tshuva where he was very opposed to the recitation of the formula L'shem Yichud Kudsha Brichu, that the Hasidim had a practice of saying that, and the Noda Bihuda objected to it. The Noda Bihuda said that there's no such need for this, that to declare kavana before a mitzvah is not actually necessary, and it implies that when you don't say that, you don't have kavana, and that could create other problems. He was against it. So there's a whole discussion to what extent the declaration could contribute to kavana by a mitzvah. So here it could be that it has a whole different role as well. That's separate from the question of mitzvah srichas kavana that you might have by any other mitzvah. When it comes to Ner Chanukah, we're especially concerned that you have an act, and that act, A, has to be public and perceptible. It's what Pirsumei Nisa represents. And it's something which could easily be seen as not for mitzvah purpose. People light candles, especially with Mana Gemara, for all kinds of reasons. So, therefore, maybe there's a greater need when it comes to Ner Chanukah that there should be a mitzvah. And the mitzvah becomes a part of the Shevach of Chanukah. So I put on the Marmar Komos, one of the earlier sources that kind of says this more clearly is the Nukei Maharai, which you may not have heard of, you may not know where to look for, but I think I did put on the Marmar Komos that it is in the back of the Rambam. So indeed, it is in the back of the Rambam. And if you look, when he talks about Chanukah, and he talks about the Rambam in Perek Gimel Halacha Gimel, where the Rambam talks about the whole institution of Chanukah as a day of Simcha and Hallel, so the formulation of the Mukhi Maharai, if you got a chance to see it, is that it says nearly the Rabbeinu Mefarish b'Hoda. What is Hoda on Chanukah? Hainu Hadlakas Neris Chanukah U Bircho Seha Shezehu Nikra Hoda Al Hanes. That a part of the Hoda is the bracha itself. So this could have a number of nafkaminas lahalacha. So among them, we mentioned already, we alluded to earlier, the whole question of whether it's applicable in a situation of suffik, that normally, as we've been discussing today, suffik d'rabbanan l'hakel, so suffik brachos l'hakel, so you would normally assume if you're not sure whether to make a bracha, leave it out, or you're not sure whether the mitzvah is obligatory in the first place, leave the bracha out. But here, we saw that Rabbi Yaakov Emdin thought that maybe you should make a bracha even mafum suffik. The example we talked about was lighting candles, at least bizman ha-gemara, after tichla regel menashuk. That even though it's a machlokas, whether you can light that late, but it sounds like from a Shulchan Aruch like you make a bracha, which caused Lad and Lefarshim to ask why that should be. So one possible explanation is that maybe the bracha of Chanukah is more a part of the mitzvah than other brachos. And again, we don't fully accept that in the sense that we don't say the halacha, that if you have a suffik by Birchas Chanukah, you should make the bracha. But there is such a view, it's based on this idea, probably, that the bracha takes an integral role in the mitzvah itself. What other nafkaminas could it have? I also gave you a tosis in Sota. This was pointed out by the Sefer Gevuras Yitzchak, Rebitzchak Sorotskin, that when it comes to brachos of hodah, so tosis in Sota says that any expression of shavach and hodah you could make in any language, because it makes sense that if it's about Shavuot, it's all about your understanding. So if you understand another language, then you could use that language for Shavuot for Hodah. Now when it comes to Birchas HaMitzvos in general, so the Magen Avraham assumes that Birchas HaMitzvos, you don't have to understand. You can say the formula, if you don't understand it, it's also okay. So you could pose a question, maybe that's true by general Birchas HaMitzvos, but maybe when it comes to Ner Chanukah, since it's a part of the Hodah, maybe there is an inyan to actually say the bracha itself. And that maybe that's a part of the whole process of the mitzvah. Okay, so let's assume that that structure exists when it comes to the bracha of l'hadlik ner shulchanukah. Right? That it's not only, it's clearly a berachas mitzvah, but maybe it's not a simple berachas mitzvah like we find elsewhere, but maybe it assumes a greater role in Ner Chanukah because it's a part of the process of the Hodah, whatever ramifications that might have. What would you say about these other components? So what about the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan? What about the bracha of Shachianu here? I'll go even farther. What about Haneiros Halal? Right, which, as we've discussed, has an early source. It's mentioned in the Masechet Sofrim. So, do any of these play a similarly crucial role in the mitzvah itself? How might it be reflected l'halacha if it did? Any thoughts? Jonathan?
We have to say that.
Okay, it would seem to be crucial, right? Perhaps. And what else? Any other possibilities? How it would be... do they become a part of the mitzvah process? A part of the Berachas HaMitzvah process? Well, what about the order of the brachos? And what about the halacha of over las yasa? Right, so for example, bracha of Sha'asa Nisan. Right, by the way, is that only if you like the menorah, or can you make Sha'asa Nisan if you don't like the menorah?
Zero.
Well, brachos haroes, if you see the menorah maybe. What if you don't have a menorah at all?
Mr. Brewer
says...
You can.
So it seems like that's a little bit of a machlokas. We'll talk about this a little bit more tomorrow to give it a little more of a fair treatment. But if you saw the She'iltas and the Meiri and Shabbos, they seem to understand that Sha'asa Nisan is connected to the day and not exclusively to the mitzvah. Although the Meiri and Megillah does say otherwise. What about the question of where it should be done? Do you make all the brachos first? So, Avul Asiyasin for sure is a requirement by the bracha of Lahadlik. So, do we assume the standard of Avul Asiyasin by all three brachas? So, the Ramah says to do it like that. Right? The Ramah says that we should do all the brachas before the first candle. But, if you saw in the Ritva and in the Meiri, right, it was a machlokis, that the Ritva and the Meiri said there is an opinion, they don't necessarily assume this opinion, but they say that maybe the bracha of Lahadlik Ner should be on the first candle. But then, after the first candle, then you recite the other brachas. Where does Haneros Halalu fit in? Is Haneros Halalu after all the brachas, or is it in the middle? So that's also a machlokas, right? That it sounds like from the Masechta Sofrim, the Haneros Halalu is actually in the middle. That you say the Haglik Ner, and then you say Haneros Halalu, and then you say the other two brachas. The Pri Chadash quotes a view like that. It sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch, like you make the brachas and then say Haneros Halalu. And the Pri Chadash says there is a view that you say Haneros Halalu in the middle. He doesn't understand why. Why would you interrupt the brachas with Haneros Halalu? Yes, sir.
That's all going under the suggestion that even this Haneros Halalu has the same status of this Hodah and be part of the mitzvah, so then the Gemara should have mentioned it, no?
You think, right? You think it's surprising that it doesn't come up here, which seems to be why we don't worry about it so much, the halacha. But the view that it's mentioned there is interesting. And Rav Soloveitchik suggested, I saw this both in the notes that Rav Schechter published, and I heard him mention this outside, that Rav Soloveitchik thought that maybe Haneros Halalu is Li'ikuva. You have to say Haneros Halalu, otherwise you're missing something. Well, what does Li'ikuva mean? Li'ikuva of what? Of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? Maybe. Or the way it sounds more like in the written notes, that it's Likuva, the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan. That the opinion that sounds like from the Masechta Sofrim, that you should say Haneros Halalu before Sha'asa Nisan. So he explains there that maybe the idea is that Chazal wanted you to say this bracha of Sha'asa Nisan connected to a nes that is being mentioned. Maybe the nes has to be verbalized. So when you read the Megillah, so then we're going to say the nes alav. But when you light Hanukkah candles, we're not saying what the nes is. So therefore, maybe Chazal wanted that Sha'asa Nisan should have first the declaration of the nes, and Haneros Halalu perhaps plays that role. So that's an interesting question. I think, you know, before you see these sugyas, as Jonathan pointed out, it's not in the sugyas, it's not really in the Gemara, but before you see these discussions, so we probably underestimated Haneros Halalu. No one really realized how crucial a role it may play. But here it's interesting, so there's at least two machlokas in about how it's done, that here, this view, which doesn't seem to be accepted, to have it before the other two brachos, have it after the Hadlik Ner. But even if we assume that we say it at the end, so it's still a machlokas, do we say it after all the brachos are finished? I mean, after all the lighting is finished, rather, or do you say it in the middle of the lighting? That if you assume that you make all the brachos first, let's say, like the Ramah says. So you make all the brachos, then you start lighting. So when do you say Haneros Halalu? After the first candle? Or only after all the candles? So Mishnah Berurah mentions the possibility that you should say in the middle of the candle lighting. And Rav Abadi has a shuvah about this, and the shuvahs, or Yitzchak in Chelik Beis, the Reish Lan Aleph, it says that that's the way it sounds like the Mishnah Berurah and the Kaf HaChayim and all the earlier Sfarim. But he says he doesn't understand it. He says, why should it be? That especially because on the first night, what are you going to do? You don't have any in between. And all the other candles are Mahadran anyway. So he doesn't see any logic to that. So he says, say Haneros Halalu at the end. And you finished everything, which is what many people do also. But this idea of saying in the middle perhaps represents the fact that it's part of the Halakha process. And that maybe that's why there is such a view that it should even be before the other two brachos. And if not before the other two brachos, then maybe it should at least be while the candles are being lit.
I'm just not so clear on why Haneros Halalu is like so essential.
Because maybe the whole issue is that not only is there a mitzvah to light candles, but there is a mitzvah to make very clear why you're lighting the candles. Separate from the general issue of mitzvos needing kavanah, but this mitzvah especially for two reasons. One, because it's all about pirsum, so it has to be understood by others. And it's easily confused for something else. You know, Neris might be anything else. So for that two-edged reason, there's a greater need here than by other mitzvahs to declare what you're doing, and therefore it all becomes a part of it. But as we also mentioned, there's two ways to understand the importance of a Neris Halalu. You could say it's important because the candles need it, or you could say that it's important because the bracha of Sha'asa Nisan needs it. that's what the Rav was quoted as saying, that in order to say Asha'as HaNisim, maybe you need a verbalized miracle, and the verbalized miracle isn't there unless you actually say Haneir Solo.
But if it was that, if that clarification was that important, would it not already be included in the Bracha to begin with?
The Bracha itself?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because he also asks, he says, all right, so if you're saying that the Masechta Sofrim is telling you, you have to spell it out first. And that's why I say it before Asha'as HaNisim. So, okay, so you're going to tell me that by Mikra Megillah it's not an issue because the whole Kriyas of Megillah is the story, is the verbalized story of the Nes, so you don't need a special Haneris Halala for Kriyas of Megillah. But there is a difference because by Kriyas of Megillah you say the Bracha before and the Asha'as HaNisim before. So we're willing to allow the verbalization to take place after the Bracha. And here we're saying, oh, according to the Masechta Sofrim, you have to do the verbalization before Asha'as HaNisim. Why can't we just do the same thing like we do by Mikra Megillah? Verbalize it right afterwards. So the Rav suggested, and it could be that that's indeed our minute, right? That maybe that explains why we don't follow Masechta Sofrim, and why we do say Haneir Solalo either afterwards or actually at the very end of having lit all the candles. But in terms of a difference, so Rav Soloveitchik made a point along the lines of what you're saying, that maybe there's a difference between the bracha of Kriyas and Megillah and the bracha of Chanukah, that there's more of an explanation of the Nes in the brachos that are recited before Kriyas and Megillah than there are in Ner Chanukah, so therefore that was enough for Asha'as HaNisim there, but not enough here. So maybe that's a possibility as well. So in any event, so we're going to run out of time, so just to set up, we'll continue from tomorrow, and we'll kind of end on a question, and we'll pick it up tomorrow, that what we see here is that there's a strong possibility that the bracha of l'hadlik ner is part of the mitzvah itself. And we could even extend that to these other brachos and see them as part of the mitzvah also. That maybe even Shachianu, despite it being in other places, we didn't talk about that very much, but Asha'as HaNisim also, maybe Asha'as HaNisim is a part of the mitzvah, and maybe even Haneiros Halalu is a part of the mitzvah. So this is relevant to the question of how exactly we understand the bracha of Haroa. The idea that you can make Asha'as HaNisim without actually lighting the Ner Chanukah, and when do you have such an obligation? If you got a chance to see, that was a major machlokus HaRishonim, so we'll try Be'ez Hashem to pick that up tomorrow and to briefly discuss that topic, also get in Chashad and Ka'ara and all of that, and be able to hopefully remain on schedule. Okay, I wish everyone a wonderful day. We'll have another time.